I read a joke the other day, which is not all that funny. In the new copy of Reader's Digest, it said, the sportscaster on TV says, we interrupt your marriage to bring you the football season. Does that hit home to anybody? Let's take a look at Ephesians 5 for just a minute, verses 22 to 31. Turn there if you'd like. I want to read this passage and then we'll just make a couple of comments. Oh, great. Okay, starting with verse 22. Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ also is the head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body. But as the church is subject to Christ, so also the wives ought to be to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and blameless. So husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church, because we are members of his body. For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Notice verse 23, it says, for the husband is the head of the wife. Verse 25, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church. And verse 28, so husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. Well, this is a basis certainly for our discussion this afternoon. And the husband is to be the leader. He's to be the spiritual leader of the family. He's to be the head. But sorry to say that in many, many marriages in America today, it's not true. The husband has abdicated his responsibility. And many Christian men as well. And we'll use this passage some as we go through the discussion, but turn over to 1 Timothy 3, verses 4 and 5. It says, he must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? Well, this is talking to spiritual leaders of, you know, if we're leading a study, helping one person, I think this passage is applicable to any in that category. And the point is that, and we'll get into the children a little bit too, the control and managing the household. It's the man. He is to manage the household well. And so for in Ephesians 5 and 1 Timothy 3, give us a few guidelines and principles to base our discussion on. And, of course, at the outset of the discussion, I'd like to say that lack of communication, the lack of it, is the number one problem in marriages today. Of course, this includes problems with finances and sex as well, because, in a sense, they are communication problems. And we'll relate some of the topics we're going to discuss to the communications area. Cecil Osborne, in his excellent book, The Art of Understanding Your Mate, gives about 10 commandments for husbands, and I'm going to relate to those also and give some comments on them and touch on each of these points. Number one is treat your wife with strength and gentleness. Treat your wife with strength and gentleness. Women, regardless of their intelligence, capability, and drive, they want to lean on a man. And they want to be taken care of. They may fuss and balk and scream and argue, but if they win, somehow they aren't satisfied, are they? They're put together that way. And ultimately, they want the husband to be in charge. But they don't want a dictator either. They want the husband to be in charge, but in a gentle way. And the combination of strength and tenderness is not easily achieved. if one does not possess it innately, but we can work on it. My wife and I knew a couple in another city, and the wife was always nagging at her husband and kicking up her heels and seemingly the real problem in the marriage. And she was explosive and demanding, and I thought many a time, boy, what a bummer of a wife he got. But as I began to delve into his life over a period of weeks and months, I found out that he was the real problem because he was lazy, undisciplined, he was not in control, he was indecisive. No wonder she made so much noise. And when that husband began to take charge in the right manner, she began to respond. And it wasn't easy because of several years of habit and of tradition and the way they've been doing things. But today they're making great progress and God is blessing their lives. And you may be in that boat or you may know of some couples that are in that kind of a situation. But the key here is, of course, we can be more decisive than we are and yet gentle and respectful and considerate. A gentleman is a gentle man, not a sissy, but it's a gentle man. Number two, give ample praise and reassurance. Give ample praise and reassurance. Because for thousands of years, women were in a subordinate position, they are much more vulnerable and insecure than men. And instinctively, they feel a need for someone to protect them and their children and to provide for the family. And this need is really there, isn't it, men? It's there. And when a wife asks, "Do you love me?" she's not asking for information. She's asking for reassurance. Right? You may think she is asking for information, but she's asking for reassurance. Since verbal expression of affection is a need of hers, go along with it, whether you feel like it or not. Boy, we can't, I don't think we can give enough praise. And that goes for our children as well. Get into the area of being critical. And we'll get into that, avoiding criticism in just a minute in another area. But praising. Looking for ways to praise our wives. Every day. Number three, define the areas of responsibility. Yes, she takes care of the house, cooks, and her primary responsibility, has the primary responsibility for the children, especially when they're very young. And you earn the living, but there are many less clearly defined areas. Who takes out the garbage, for instance? Who's responsible for the lawn? Who's responsible for choosing the new car? Or deciding where to spend your vacation? Who casts the deciding vote concerning what to do on weekends? Most women want the husband to participate. And a wife often feels more secure if she can just talk things over with her husband. But a couple must find out for themselves where these various spheres of influence lie. A selfish husband or wife may insist on making the final decision, but marriage involves resolving the incompatible needs of two different people. And I'd like to refer you to Philippians 2, 3, and 4 here, but it's maybe a familiar verse to you. And over in the King James it says, "Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things or his own needs, but every man also on the needs of others." Humility, you know, the selflessness. And then tied with that, also in this area, Mark 10:45. And that says, "For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others." And see, as we begin to serve our wives and or serve them more of the time, see, it's an attitude we're talking about here, an attitude that we have or that we gain, an attitude of serving, of preferring the other one once in a while or more often. And in this area of defining areas of responsibility, don't be afraid to cross areas. You know, your wife may be sick or she may be just snowed with the kids. Well, don't be afraid to take out the garbage if she usually does it or whatever it is. That goes back to that area of serving. Selflessness. Dr. Bob Smith of Bethel College gave a series of messages at Glen Eyrie a few years ago, and I still remember the illustration he gave that he said he rolled out of bed every morning and on his knees and prays. And he said, "Lord," one of the things he prays, "Lord, how can I serve you today?" And when he's through praying, he opens his eyes, and there's an unmade bed. And he gets up and makes it. So that's the first thing he sees, the way he can serve the Lord that day, whether he does it every day or not. But I've been convicted of that many times as I remember that, because there are times when my wife's busy with our little girl, and or she's going to go somewhere, and I can make the bed just to help out. And she doesn't have to ask me. I just do it once in a while to help out. Being sensitive, the attitude of serving. Well, how long does it take to carry out the garbage? You know, these things take about 2 or 3 minutes. Some of these things that cause a little friction and see a few smiles, the garbage, the squeezing of the toothpaste, you know, all the little goodies. Finances is another area. Seems like a man's job, and when most couples get married, the man assumes that because it's the masculine thing to do. But I read about one man who bought 8 cars in 5 years, and he ended up in terrible debt and on the brink of divorce. Well, of course, he ended up eventually at a marriage counselor, a Christian one. He was a Christian. He and his wife were Christians. And it was not the first counseling session, but after several counseling sessions, he finally said, "I'm good on my job, I earn plenty of money, but I'm not very good at handling it. I'd like Marie to take over the finances." Now, he wouldn't have said that the month after he was married, but when he was near divorce and he was way in debt, he finally admitted it. Number 4, avoid criticism. A man who constantly criticizes and condemns his wife can produce numerous negative results in his wife. She may, for one thing, become hostile, emotionally unresponsive, sexually frigid. She might lose her identity through being constantly beaten down, or unload her resentment on the children and cause emotional disturbances in them, or even decide to give up the marriage. Avoid criticism. This is a big area. I find one thing I was just thinking about in preparing this, that I've known on several times I've gone in and or there'd be a thing. I went into my little girl's room to help her get dressed one time, and I got her socks out of the drawer, and it just seemed like the drawer was a mess. You know, everything was all in a pile, and I don't know whether it was my wife or my daughter, but I blamed it on my wife. But later on, I went, you know, I thought about myself, and I thought, I have a desk down in the basement. It is one big clutter. And you know what we're prone to do, I am, and I'm sure you are some of the time, is criticize our wives in areas where we're weak ourselves. We criticize our wives in areas where we're weak. We do this with other people too. But that's an area we should be aware of. And 1 Corinthians 13 in the Living, 4-7, verses 4-7. It's an excellent. You ought to memorize that passage in the Living. Meditate on it. Pray over it. Love builds up. And it starts out that love is very patient and kind. I know I'm not naturally a patient person. I'm impatient. You know, I get behind the little old lady driving down the center of the road, and she can't decide, and I just honk, you know, and I hope I don't ever run into somebody that knows me, because sometimes I lose my cool. Impatience. The verse says it's very patient. Love is very patient and kind. And then in the Living, it gives several nevers. Never jealous or envious. Never boastful or proud. Never haughty or selfish or rude. Well, I'd challenge you to get to know that passage. Look for ways to praise your wife, as I said before, every day. It's a substitute for criticism. Another thing in this area, don't ever attack your wife's character. In a fit of anger, you may something like, "You're lazy." You know, and she'll never forget that, even if you ask her forgiveness. She'll never forget it. And if you tend to explode before her, well, you need to pray and ask God to help you hold those character assassinations in until you cool off, and then discuss them together in a sane frame, an adult, mature frame of mind. And you know, sometimes we men will say something in the morning and we'll be critical of our wives, and you know, maybe we ask their forgiveness before we go to work. Well, she'll say yes, but she'll think about it. And we forget it, we go to work, we come home that night whistling a tune, and she's not all that happy, and you know, we're ready for sex that night, and we wonder why she's not the least bit interested. Well, it gets back to communication. And don't ever attack your wife's character. When Pat and I got engaged, we were at a picnic just the next week. And this was in Colorado Springs, and a couple, there were a lot of people, this was out at Glen Eyrie on the lawn, and a couple was there that we knew fairly well, and the husband had known we were engaged since the day we got engaged, and the wife, this was where the wife was being critical of the husband, but she found out that he knew about it for several days, and she was just finding out about it there, and she began to berate him in front of, 10 or 15 people, just because he didn't tell her. You know, and Pat and I talked about that on the way home that day, and we decided that before God, we just wouldn't criticize each other in public. You know, don't criticize your wife in public either. That's love builds up. We get under pressure. Boy, we've got to get a handle on that. And we can, because God wants us to. Number five, remember the importance of the little things. Okay? Most women are more detail-oriented than men, right? We men tend to forget the little things that are very, very important to our wives, like anniversaries, their birthday. Well, that's something I work at all the time. I went to a Navigator staff conference. I guess it's been about 4 years ago when we lived in Arizona and went to California. My wife couldn't go. Our little girl was too young to take, and she was still nursing her and all. And so it was going to be a week-long conference. And I knew there would be a lot of her friends there. And I took a notebook along, and I just jotted down such things as who had gotten engaged, who was going to have a baby, and, you know, who gives a hoot as far as men are concerned? But to a wife, that's very important. And if it's important to her, well, I can be thoughtful and considerate enough to bring home a few of those little tidbits of information and let her in on things, because it gives her a feeling of being in on things, remembering the little things. And along with this, I feel that, you know, the longer you're married, things begin to slip. And I ask this question, do we lose that first love? Do we always sit on opposite sides of the car, never hold hands, never open the car door for our wives anymore, and never bring them a little treat? My wife will light up like a Christmas tree, and I can go over to Lair's Flower Shop and get two carnations that cost less than a dollar. They give me the little greenery and wrap it in a little cellophane thing, and I take it home, and she just lights up, you know. That's not very expensive to get her excited and turned on and happy. And it could be something else that would turn on your wife. But seating her at the table, opening the door to a building or to the house. We probably did these things the first month or two we were married, but do we do them today? Boy, they really appreciate that. I know a couple, and we went to look at a house with them one time, and I got out and opened the door for Pat, and they each got out and of each side of their car, and he told me this later that he just cringed. He said, because, you know, I didn't say anything to the guy. I was just doing what I usually do. But it really got to him. And I know his wife noticed. And the women, the wives, they appreciate the little things. It just shows that we love them. This is communication. And I just challenge you to get a little book, a little black book, and that you can carry in your pocket or your something that could fit in your wallet and write things down. Because whether it's at work, you may have a technical job and you think, she doesn't care about that. But she is interested in what happens at work. She is interested in your sphere of influence. It's part of being considerate. Number six, recognize her need for togetherness. And see, some men, maybe they are spend too much time with the boys. It may be a nagging wife that runs them off, but we'll get to why that is in a few minutes. Maybe some men have wives that are too dependent, but there's a balance is what I'm trying to say, and that a sensitive husband will analyze the time he spends with his wife, and he'll see what they can do together, whether it's recreationally or socially, spiritually, whatever. Because I'm sure if we ask our wives, they would want to spend more time with us. You see, they're home with those kids and those four walls, and we're out going to lunch with somebody and out doing this and that, or flying off here and there if your job takes you on trips, and they just wish they could go once in a while. And their little world, maybe it's small children, and they don't have any adult conversation. They want to be with you some of the time or more of the time. And along with this, I challenge you to, in the area of communication, being together, to sit down an hour a week. Or if it takes more than that, do it and talk through. When the kids are in bed or gone or you won't be disturbed, and really talk and pray through the week what you're going to do together, your plans. and planning your time involvements together, spiritual, social, TV, time with the children, whatever. That's one reason I'm sold on couples Bible studies. We have hundreds of women in our church in Bible study and some men, and we're increasing the number of couple studies because it's something a couple can be in together. In fact, the church can be a problem because I went to a large church in Dallas 10, 15 years ago, and boy, it had a library that would make my regional library out in Arapahoe County look sick, and a bowling alley and skating rink and all that. Well, boy, you know, some people could spend six nights a week there, but were they doing it as a family? Or rather, was the church a babysitter? In other words, spiritual things, do things together, couples Bible study. A wife feels this much more keenly than the husband. Number seven, give her a sense of security. And, of course, a woman's need for security is much greater than most men imagine. And in specific areas, women's needs vary. Many women derive a sense of security, often without being aware of it, from having a husband who does household chores. Oh, I'm really preaching it myself here. And this means that the husband is interested in the nest or the home and thus interested in her. You know, it can be, if you're like me and you're all thumbs, well, mowing the lawn. It could be mowing the lawn or raking the leaves or helping move the furniture if your wife's a furniture mover. And just taking an interest in her daily activities. And this is a big area I find that I can think of two things right now. My wife asked me 2 weeks ago that the closet door in my little girl's closet fell off. Or half of it did. Fortunately, she wasn't there. She was in the room, but it didn't. But it's sitting there, and I see it every time I walk down the hall, and I haven't put it back up. She asked me a month ago to put up drill a hole in the ceiling and bedroom, put up one of those hanging things, those macrame hanging plants. I haven't done it yet, you know. And I know a fellow, his wife asked him to paint a bedroom, and it was 6 months later before he got around to it. Well, this I could preach to myself, and maybe to you too. But the point is, when he finally got around to doing it, oh, she was so appreciative, you know. She just hugged him, and he could just tell. But see, by putting that off, whether it's the hanging thing or the closet door or the painting, you know, a barrier develops. Because see, they read this, he doesn't love me. He doesn't love me. And we do, but they read that we don't. It's just an area of communication again. Number eight is recognizing the validity of her moods. Of course, part of this can be attributed to the monthly cycle. And we husbands just need to learn to be patient and considerate. Don't be panicked or disturbed by mood swings. Ride them out with patience. And for sure, don't ask what is the matter or say, snap out of it. That just brings on more tears. I found that my wife wants to be quiet at times. And when we were first married, I always asked her, I always think, what did I do? Or why is she mad? Well, I've learned, no, she may be sitting in the living room. She may be thinking of how she's going to redecorate the living room. But she just needs to be quiet. She wants to be quiet. So recognize the validity of her moods. Nine, cooperate with her in every effort to improve your marriage. Cooperate with her in every effort to improve your marriage. If she reads a book on improving marriage and suggests you read it, probably your first response will be, I'm too busy. And secondly, if that's not it, it'll be to think there's implied criticism in her handing you the book to read. Well, read it. You may learn something. This is true. If your wife's a reader, she'll be reading and she'll want you to read something. And I found there are so many good books out today. We'll give you a sheet with a bibliography on it in a few minutes. And on a husband-wife relationship, on raising the children, and we ought to be reading those books. We want to have quality marriages, quality families. Well, don't be dismayed because she's always pushing for a better relationship. And God's given us the particular wife. She's uniquely created by God, and she's uniquely created for you. And I found that tied in with this is it's only an insecure husband who will never seek counsel from his wife. Leroy Imes, I know very well. And I know that he's about as strong a man, and he's confident, he's on top of his job, he's been successful. And yet I know the kind of wife he has. I've stayed in their home, and I know that he seeks her counsel on things. And this is important. See, men, if we're secure, we'll do it. Because I find when I ask my wife about something related to my work, it'll give me a different perspective and new insights to some of the decisions that I'm facing. And that also helps them to feel needed and accepted too. Remember, we are one flesh, according to Genesis 2. And God has given us the particular wife that we have to complement us, to complement our ministry, our life. Number 10, discover her particular individual needs and try to meet them. You have to spend time with your wife to find out what her needs are. And this may mean some additional talk time. Time away from the kids, but size her up anew. What is she talking about these days? What's she doing? What's she reading? What are her hobbies? What is she frustrated about? Ask her and find out. Just a few other questions I would ask is, do you pray together regularly? Do you pray for her every day? Do you call her from work and tell her you love her? Or ask her how things are going once in a while, if that's fits in with your job and that you could do it. Another area another question is, how are you doing at listening? This is where we men are weak, at really listening to what they really say. Communication. Are we on top of our finances? Well, Doug Caffey's here today, an expert in this field. And if you're not, see me. I'm not an expert, but I've done some study on it and given some workshops on it. Or you could see him, or you could get the tape that he's giving today, because it causes friction in the family. It ruins many, many marriages, the financial plight. How's your sex life? Herbert Miles has a good book called Sexual Happiness in Marriage. Herbert Miles, Sexual Happiness in Marriage. If you're not sure how your sex life is, well, ask your wife. She'll sure let you know. Guarantee you. I think the two things that contribute to my wife, Pat, and our success in our marriage, I feel is, one is that we are best friends, and a lot of couples aren't. We are best friends. We like to sit down and talk. We like to be together. We enjoy making small talk. Some men aren't very good at it, but they can learn to be. And we just enjoy being together. And the other is that we both realize how much we need each other. And I think that contributes to the success of our marriage. I know I need her. We've talked about this. I know what areas I need her, and she knows what areas she needs me. And that's a great feeling to feel needed, as well as I know I'm accepted by her. Well, Paige Williams, in his book, Do Yourself a Favor, Love Your Wife, just hits home again and again on that men have an ego problem. They're stubborn, they're selfish, they're proud. And that doesn't mean all the time, but that's the basic problem that we men face. And it's something that we can work on. And back to those verses, Philippians 2, 3, and 4, and Mark 10, 45. And it's Philippians 2, verse 5 says, let this attitude be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. This disposition, the servant heart, in other words, because that really characterized the Lord Jesus Christ. One last comment on the husband. I find that if there's a problem in the marriage, I've learned this just through counseling enough couples, even if it looks like the wife, I'll start with the husband. He's the head of the house. God has ordained him to be, and if there's a problem in the marriage, that's where I'll start looking. I mean, I didn't mean the wife is scot-free or not at fault, but I think if you start looking there, you're going to get to the source of the problem a little more quickly, because he is responsible. Okay, let's take a few minutes and talk about children. These three references, Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way he should go, even when he is old he will not depart from it. And Proverbs 13:24 says, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. Proverbs 13:24. And Ephesians 6:4, and fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Okay, the first area we'll talk about, of course it's a big area, it's love. Parent love, or parental love, begins with married love. Parental love begins with married love. And if you're happily married and content with your relationship with your wife, it will have a profound effect upon your children. Do you hug and kiss your wife and show affection to her in front of your children? Do you tell her that you love her in front of the children? That's very important. You should. Boys, small children particularly, have computers. I mean, they're little minds, and they take in every word, every action. If there's friction, boy, that just soaks right in that computer. Every tone of voice around the house. And I personally feel that you cannot overlove your children. Yes, they spoil them, right. But most children are underloved. They're starved for genuine love. In America, things have become a substitute for genuine love, giving our children things. Discipline could even become a substitute. Not necessarily. Discipline can be love, showing love. Well, Howard Hendricks, professor at Dallas Theological Seminary, and he's considered an expert in this field of family relationships, says that the best spiritual training for children is not church, although that's very good. It's not reading the Bible to them. That's good. Family devotions, that's important. But the best and most lasting spiritual training for your child is the way dad treats mom and mom treats dad. You get that? It's how you act in front of your wife, how you relate to your wife and your wife relates to you. That's the best spiritual training your children can get. You take over the period of the 18 years they're home, if they're home about that number of years. Boy, the children, they observe these things, and that's what we call love in action, and it leaves an impact. The example you set, in other words, around the home. Not the big smile on Sunday, or at the church meeting, or family devotions, but your example, how we live it. And of course, tied in with this is the amount and quality of time. The quality of time we spend with our children, whether they're young or whether they're teenagers. Is it the constant, just a minute? For the little ones while you're finishing the sports page or the Broncos' exciting victory over Kansas City last Sunday? The just a minutes can turn a child off, especially if that just a minute means you never get around to them. Quality time with children, giving them your undivided attention. Getting involved in their activities. I have a little girl that's nearly five, and it's not always fun to get down on the floor and play with her. Well, she got at a garage sale yesterday for 25 cents. They got a little Fisher-Price Ferris wheel, and it has a tune that goes with it. You know, that's not exactly exciting. But to get out on the floor and play with that, that's what she wants me to do. And I can get excited about it. I'd better. Because, boy, they read you if you're just doing it because they're nagging at you and they know that you're not really involved. And you know, if we get involved in their activities, that's just the way we win the heart of an adult we're trying to win to Christ, is developing a relationship. And that's what we want to do with our kids and with our wives. Many of us are not only interested in being a disciple, but in discipling others. And Howard Hendricks spoke at a Navigator staff conference this summer, and he pointed his finger at the Navigator staff and said, if you're not discipling your own children, what business do you have of discipling others? Oh. There was a long pause, and that's true. I feel very keenly about that myself. And if we're too busy in the church or too busy leading Bible studies, doing good Christian things and neglecting our children, we'll pay the price for it. Teaching our children is important, along with setting the example. That's dynamite. Discipling our own children. Boy, who else is more important than our own children to raise up as disciples of Jesus Christ? The Great Commission, go and make disciples. Well, start with our children. And the one thing that we work at in our home in teaching our little girl is spiritual lessons from life around the house, the circumstances that she's in. And they have a lot more impact than a Bible story. And I'm not knocking Bible stories, because we read them every night and every day. And, well, at least once a day we're reading some Bible story to her. And often from the Bible too. But taking the positive and negative things that she's done around the house and teaching spiritual principles from them, boy, it has a lot more lasting impact. And it gets the job done a lot faster. Well, just as with a wife, listening is important with our children. My little girl asks, seems like, 100 questions an hour. And, you know, my wife Pat and I try to answer every one. And that gets annoying at times. But the reason we try to answer every one is because we know that when she's 15, if we don't answer those questions now, she's not going to be asking those questions behind. We're not going to know what's going on behind that cute little smile of a 15-year-old. And I believe that if we try to answer them now, that doesn't mean she gets to interrupt every conversation, but I mean, I believe she'll still be asking them and letting us know what's going on when she's 15 or 18 or 12. That's important. Listening. We all need to develop an area of listening. And again, it's a sign of selflessness and a genuine interest in others. Follow through on promises. Well, Bill Gothard, in his seminar on basic youth conflicts, maybe you remember this, it sure had an impact on me, told about the father who promised his son he would go fishing, take him fishing on Saturday, and then, you know, Friday night he gets the call from the mission to come down and preach because the speaker's sick, and he says, sure, I'll come, and the next morning early he gets up and goes, and, you know, he'd completely forgotten about the fishing trip, but the son hadn't. He got up and Dad was gone, and he was greatly disappointed. And you let those type of things build up over a period of years, and you will have a bitter son or daughter, one who will never trust you. If you say you're going to do something, even in just a minute, well, follow through on it. That's being honest, too. Another area is just making sure that we have our children under control. Remember that every child is uniquely created by God, but are they under control? Some children require more spankings than others, depending on their temperament. But if you're the head of the house and you're in a secure relationship with Jesus Christ, you can control your children with or without spankings. And they need to have boundaries and guidelines. And we need to be sure that we follow through on discipline when it's needed. Consistency in our discipline is very important. And I believe because the father is the head of the house, when he's home, he ought to be handling the discipline. And most homes, unfortunately, are run by the mothers. As far as the children are concerned, and this is sad. Another area related to the control of the children is yelling at them all the time. That's the way some parents discipline, and they yell at the children all the time. But you know, you've lost the battle as soon as you raise your voice, because your child knows immediately that they've won. They've won. They know it. But that, of course, is important to begin when the children are young, but it's not impossible to start older. I know a fellow who's become a Christian 2 years ago, and he has 4 teenage sons. And he's kind of discouraged. He begins reading books on the family and all, and two of his sons have been on drugs. But God knows this, and I believe God can still raise those 4 sons up in his own time to be godly men. So it's never too late. And if our children are under control, we aren't always saying, don't, no, no, stop, quit, all the time. And it goes back to that loving relationship between the husband and wife, doesn't it? Boy. Well, when there's friction in the home, the kids' antenna, or their radar, is powerful. Another area related to this, I think, is just when I see children running wild in a store, or even in a house, or my own home, other people's kids, it kind of burns me up because I don't... The father may be sitting there talking to the host father, and the kids, he's just oblivious to what the kids are doing. Well, that's being inconsiderate. One other area is for fathers of small children, do we expect our kids to act like grown-ups? When we have company, I fight this all the time. Do we expect our little girl to act like a grown-up at the table? Never to throw anything, never to yell, never to... Well, if they do act up, it's partly because of there's all adult conversation. That doesn't mean there should be all attention devoted to the child, but some should be, but certainly not all. And there's a balance in that. Praise the child for their inner qualities. I pray every day that my daughter will grow up to love Jesus Christ with all her heart, and that she'll have an attitude as a, all through her life, of a servant. I want her to be a servant because that's the outstanding characteristic I see in Jesus' life. He was a servant. And I want her to have these inner qualities that are even brought out in Proverbs 31. I want her to become that kind of a godly wife. I want her to grow into a godly woman. But character traits is where we need to work on these in the home. These are the lasting qualities. Just as with the wife, don't attack your child's character either. We have a neighbor. He's German and loud, and they have a little girl, 9, and a little boy, 6. The little boy's name is Mark. And I heard him a few months ago say, "You stupid idiot, can't you do anything right?" And that little boy, Mark, comes down to our house to play with Heather. He knocks, rings the doorbell, and once in a while I'm there, and I'll go to the door, and, "Hi, Mark, how you doing?" And he just hangs his head. At 6, what's he going to be like when he's 10 or 15? His character has been assassinated by his father. "You stupid idiot, can't you do anything right?" He won't even look a male of any other adult in the face. Just hangs his head. Oh, makes my heart ache. Give your kids lots of praise. Lots of praise. And one last point. As parents, be sure that you back each other up in the discipline. That's easy to get tangled up on. Books. There are a lot of books to read. I would challenge you again, men, to read books. There are 10 years ago, or 5 even, there weren't even a handful of good books to read on child raising. Read books. And talk to people.